Thanks for coming. My name is Marty D'Angelo, and I'm presenting How the iPad Can Save Accessibility. I appreciate you being here, because looking at the tweets from last night, there was quite a bit going on, and I'm kind of surprised this many people were able to get out of bed. So I appreciate it. I work for a company called Digitas Health. We're based in Philadelphia, and we do a lot of health marketing. But my personal passion has been accessibility for years, and I got into the usability game kind of related to that. There's my information. You can email me at martytdx@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. So how did this presentation come about? Last year, I went to South by Southwest my first time, and I had a great time, and I went to a lot of accessibility sessions. And one thing that struck me about the different sessions I went to is that almost all of them mentioned mobile. And in addition to that, I looked at the crowds, and a lot of the crowds, even the disabled people who were at these sessions, had mobile devices with them. They were using iPads, they were using phones. And it got me thinking about how the disabled use mobile devices and how they can, you know, get about their daily lives in a much better way than they do with desktops. And listening to the sessions and them talking about the issues that the disabled have with both websites and particularly on mobile got me thinking about, well, those sound a lot like the issues I hear that mobile users have. And it got me thinking about the synergies between the two and how that improving one might be able to help improve the other one. So I want to talk really quickly about accessibility. If you're like me, I've worked in doing a lot of designs, a lot of commercial designs, and unfortunately, what happens quite often is that accessibility and the disabled become kind of a secondary thing to time and budget. And so as much as we try to do accessibility for our websites, a lot of times it gets pushed aside. And what happened, I found, is that when mobile users start experiencing the same problems, there was a lot more noise, a lot more people got upset, and when they made a lot more noise, developers took notice and they started doing some things. And they improved the UX of mobile design. And one of the caveats of that was that improving the UX on mobile designs actually helped the accessibility of those designs as well. So real quick, do we have any disabled users in the audience? Just a couple. Do you have any of these issues when you're using the web? Okay. What about mobile users? How many mobile users have these issues when you're using the web, either on your phones or just in general? And that's kind of the point, is that most people think of accessibility and they think this, it's a really small audience, and that, well, okay, we'll try to do what we can for them, but we really don't need to address these issues. Well, it's not just the disabled. It's your average users. It's also your mobile users are having the same issues as your disabled users are having. And so when you're solving these problems, you're solving it for a much greater audience than you may have expected. 17% of Americans have some form of significant disability. Now, this number is really hard to pin down. I found numbers as low as 10%, as high as 30%. And it's because the definitions of disabilities tend to change. But in general, this seemed to be in the middle range. And what that comes down to is about 24 million people have a hearing disability, significant hearing disability, including 2 million who are completely deaf. There's 21.5 million people with vision disabilities, including 1.3 million who are legally blind and 120,000 who are completely blind. And then a kind of lesser thought of group is the mobility disabled, and those are people who have everything from fine motor skill issues to can't use a mouse at all and have to use a keyboard. And they also have significant issues with a lot of our websites. So what we have here is a failure to communicate accessibly. And what I mean by that is that we do all these designs, we come up with some great designs, and we forget about the real point of our website should be the content. But when your content can't be consumed by your audience, you failed. Apologize for that slide. Not to say there haven't been a lot of people trying to do their best to make accessibility and usability be a huge issue, a huge thing. These are some of the big ones, and I'm sure a lot of you have followed them. I apologize again for the slide. But unfortunately, it's still gotten left by the side. When I worked for a company in the past, we did a e-commerce site for one of the largest sports retailers in the country, and as I was advocating for some accessibility functionality, one of the marketers actually said this: blind people don't buy sporting goods, do they? And he didn't mean it in a bad way. In his mind, he's thinking they're not going out and playing sports. Well, obviously, they do. But what he wasn't considering is that they're still sports fans. Even the blind can listen to sports. And even if they don't really follow sports, they still want sweatshirts. They may want hats. They buy gifts. And they had not considered any of this when they were building it. They wanted to build their site. And so we went through and did a lot of things to make the site a lot more accessible than it would have been previously. So, again, what is the major problem? The major problem is that everyone has problems with the web, but the disabled have a much larger spate of problems. And it really comes down to the majority of it is they can't get access to the content they want to get access to. And so we need to think about our content in a way that works for the disabled. And remember that in many ways, their needs are going to match your mobile users. So if you solve for one, you're going to solve for both. So I went through and I kind of went and tried to find the different issues that many disabled users have on the web. As you can see, though the visually disabled have a majority of the issues, everybody has a pretty good list of things that they can't use on the web. And it gets worse on mobile. As mobile came out and we started getting the ability to look at websites on our phones, on our tablets, on PDAs, the issues that existed only got worse because the devices themselves weren't really ready to handle the content we had out there, and our content was getting more advanced, and we were trying to go for the highest common denominator, which was leaving a lot of the people with lesser functionality behind. This is from last year. Jared Smith had a quote: web accessibility is getting worse. There's an increasing gap between innovation and accessibility. And as I mentioned, what's happening is we have great advances, very quick advances in what we can do. But at the same time, we've got a lot of designers who try to take advantage of all the flashiness and forget about the fact that at the base level, you need to make sure that everybody can use at least your basic website. Don't bother trying to read this. This is obviously too complex, but you can look at it a little closer when I put the slides up. What I was trying to show here is I did a bunch of a survey of about 100 people, both disabled and non-disabled, in preparation for this. And what I was trying to do is find out what issues people had, both on the regular web and the mobile web. And what this graph is designed to show you is that if you look at the top, pretty much across the board, most people, including the non-disabled, have the same issues and almost to the same level of issues across the board, whether it's things like hover, requiring a mouse to get access to the content, video they can't get to, flash, non-accessible backups. And then what I think is pretty significant is if you look at the mobile side on the bottom, almost every one of those issues gets bigger when you go to a mobile interface. So what are the issues? Well, when we first came out with mobile devices, quite simply, the web sucked. They weren't, they tried to give you the web, but really what you got was WAP sites and WHTML sites, which weren't particularly good for anybody. And that's what this shows, is that you really weren't getting a great experience in general, but at least you kind of had the web. And I can vouch for this myself. As a birder, one of the great things is when you're a birder, you go out and look for these rare birds that happen to show up. And before, you get a notice of where it was and you go out looking for it. Well, birds tend to move. And so when you got the mobile web, I was able to go in and say, all right, what was the last place somebody saw it? Except I'd download it, I'd wait. It would download, except I couldn't actually read it. So I'd have to reload it and wait. And by that time, the bird usually moved. And by the way, this is called a golden cheek warbler, and it is only place you can find it in the U.S. is in the Austin area. It's an endangered species, and it's a pretty cool bird once you can actually find it. So, one of the ironies of the early web is that the sites we considered the basic sites and the non-cool sites tended to work best for the disabled because they were text. They didn't have a whole lot of flash things. They were at a basic level that ended up helping and being readable for on devices for the disabled. Then we got to smartphones, and everything got better, right? Not really. The mobile user was ready for the web, but the web wasn't ready for the mobile user. We had the ability to see what we expected to see a little bit better, but we didn't prep for the smartphone, and therefore when it actually showed up, there were a lot of liabilities, which is why you had people bringing their desktops to Starbucks. So what we were seeing is a lot of issues, and as you see here, the issues that they were seeing on the mobile web are exactly what the disabled were seeing. We had two different audiences that were having the same issues. But as the mobile web got better, accessibility lagged. Again, nothing got fixed. Same issues. Oh, now we could use scripts. Great. But now you had touchscreens, and touchscreens weren't particularly usable for the disabled. So we had mobile issues being the same issues as the disabled, but nobody did anything. Why not? Well, for one thing, actually, I wanted to go to this real quick. Sorry. This was a quote from the survey I did. And web accessibility is extremely important. If a website or information or app is not accessible, it can make anyone feel disabled. And I'm sure if you looked at websites on early phones, early smartphones especially, you kind of felt this way. Wait, why can't I get to this content? Why can't I use this site? So why didn't they get fixed? Well, primarily, people were willing to say, hey, I've got this small device, and oh, how good is it going to be when it's only this big? But the other thing was, I had the web. I had sort of the real web, and they were excited about that, and they're willing to overlook a lot of things. And from a designer aspect, all they did is they sort of focused on the size. Oh, well, it just needs to be smaller. And that was perpetuated by sites like Alistapart, which I love this site, so I don't want to disparage them at all, but they put a whole series of articles out about how to redo your website for the iPhone, how to shrink the size, how to change your width so it'll work on the iPhone. But it's... One second. I don't know where the page up button is on this one. As Christopher Schmidt said at the time, this is at 2007, we had 1 million iPhones out there, but you had 37 million disabled people. And here we were focusing on how to make it work for the iPhone instead of trying to make it work for the disabled, which, ironically enough, would have made it better on the iPhone, too. So now we had tablets come in, and primarily the iPad. I'm going to focus on the iPad here simply because it led a movement in improvement in usability on mobile. Initially, this must look pretty familiar because it's pretty much what I saw on the smartphone. Still the issues. Whether you're a mobile user or disabled user, you're still having a lot of the same issues. But the difference was now you had angry mobile users. People were coming in and they had gotten used to the iPhone, they had gotten used to their smartphones, and experiencing what was essentially a closer approximation of the real web, and they got used to that. But now they also had a device that was bigger. It wasn't just this little tiny thing, and so they expected it to be closer to their web experience. And they didn't want to be second-class citizens anymore, so they got angry, and they complained, and they made lots of noise. And suddenly designers couldn't look away anymore. They needed to address these issues more so than just shrinking the width of their websites, but actually making them work on mobile. And the changes they made actually helped accessibility because they went back in and they fixed things. They stripped down. They took out a lot of the stuff that they knew wasn't going to work on mobile and focused on the content, and that delivered a better experience overall. So a clamor for a better mobile web led to better mobile websites, which led to more accessible websites. And so those changes have had some significant improvements on a lot of the things that we were seeing previously. Not everything's fixed. Obviously, there's still people that use Flash. There's still people that use video that you can't get to. But a lot of the things are starting to get fixed, and good designers know what they need to do to make it a better website. But there's still ways to go. This was also from my survey, and again, I apologize, it's not really readable here, but when you get to my slide deck, the issues are still significant for users, and as you can see, even the non-disabled users are having pretty much the same issues as everybody, all the disabled users. So how can we fix it? Well, there's a lot of ways we can fix it. There's advances in our coding and our markup that will allow us to do a lot of great things that make our sites a lot more usable, a lot more accessible for both audiences. There's design aspects, whether it's mobile-first and responsive design, which can help create sites that contextually change to match your audience. And then there's some future developments coming in that are pretty cool. So we'll start with HTML5. This is a big buzzword right now. There are probably, I guess, about 30 or 40 sessions here this year on HTML5. And how many are you familiar with what HTML5 represents? Okay, good. It basically represents stuff that won't run on IE. So what are some of the things that HTML5 can do for us? Well, it's got new structural elements. And before, we had what was called divitis, and you just basically created a ton of divs, and you gave it class names. And well, now we have semantically appropriate types of structural code, which is, say, you've got a navigation section, you've got a article section, you've got a footer section. And what that allows you to do is actually name your components in a way that are actually relevant to the user. There's better ways to provide content alternatives. Video and audio and images can be done in much different ways. There's additional accessibility constraint or items like area and some other things. There's a tighter integration with CSS3, and the reason that's important is because it allows us to do a lot of things where we normally previously had to rely on Flash or JavaScript. Now we can do in the markup itself. And there's innovative ways in the way our sites are built. This, I think, is the most important part, good code. If you write good code that's structurally valid and semantically valid, 90% of your problems are solved right off the bat. You can always progressively enhance it to add the Flash and add the, and by Flash I mean the sparkly stuff, but a sound content hierarchy and adding your basic accessibility needs will solve most of your problems, and it will actually solve a lot of the problems for your mobile users as well. This is just an example of code where I tried to, it's kind of ugly, but you get the point. It's just making sure you use ARIA roles, make sure you use alt tags, making sure that your code structure, your headlines, all make sense. Accessible backups. This has obviously been one of the key things about accessibility, is always making sure you have an alternative for any piece of content. In the past, it was making sure you had a transcript, or making sure that you had a text backup, or alt tags, those type of things. Well, a lot of those things will help both your mobile users and your disabled audience. Video is one of the big ones. Most video on the web up until recently was Flash-based. It was, hey, we're going to create a Flash player and we're going to put it up. Well, when the iOS devices came out and the majority of Android devices, people couldn't get to that content. And so they had to come up with alternatives of how to display video. Well, those alternatives now give people the ability to get to that content that they wouldn't be able to before. Now, one of the cool things about the new HTML5 video tag and the way these are done is the browsers create their own players, so you're not relying on a plugin. And those players tend to be really accessible in terms of keyboard access and those type of things. So they're a better affordance for the disabled and for your mobile users. Now, one of the things about video, if you've never done this, is that you have to provide multiple sources. We still got a little bit of a splinter web where some browsers use one type of video and other browsers use other types of video, but what this allows you to do is provide multiple video types, and whatever the best type of video that your browser can use, they'll get to play it. Similar with audio, you do the same thing. You have an inline player that's based in the browser and it's a lot more accessible than a plugin. One additional thing about video, and this is kind of a pet peeve, which is why I threw this in, is that autoplay sucks. Don't do it. As Bruce Lawson said, providing controls is approximately 764% better than autoplaying your video. Think of it in this way. You're listening to your iPod on your computer, and all of a sudden you go to a page, and the video starts. And all of a sudden that video is playing over your whatever you're listening to. And usually it's the volume is bad, and it's really not something you give anything about. So you have to try to find the control, turn it off. Now imagine you're on a screen reader, and you're trying to read the page and learn where the controls are, and you've got a video playing over top of that. So don't do autoplay video, and try not to always give a video or volume slider as opposed to an on-off, because nobody wants to have to reset their system volume in order to play your content. So this is one of the new features, which I'm really kind of stoked about. It's called the track element, and what tracking actually exists now, it's just not supported by any browsers. But what's going to happen with it is that you'll be able to actually create captioning for videos outside of the video. So no longer do you have to create a Flash or JavaScript captioning area. No longer do you have to embed it in your actual video. Now you'll be able to do it actually outside of the video using this track command in an external text file. And the advantage of this is you can edit it a lot easier. You don't have to re-edit video. And you can style it. Because it's code, you can actually create it so that the user can manipulate the size, and you can give it text shadows. You can do a lot more to it than just having a standard way of doing it. One problem is there's two competing formats trying to be the standard. One of them, TTML, is more of an XML-based. It's a lot more complicated. WebVTT, I think, is the better format. It's literally you say, 1 second to 10 seconds, show this text. 11 seconds to 15 seconds, show this text. And it's a fairly simple way of doing it. And Opera has some great examples on how the track tag can be used. But this is also an example. Hopefully this is going to work. This was actually done by the team at Opera. And what it does is it actually shows an example where they're using it for subtitles, but the whole principle can be used as captioning as well.
Hi, my name's Dr. Archimedes Einstein, and I'm a doctor of science at the University of Science in a very famous town that you're too stupid to have heard of. Anyway, today we're going to talk about synergies.
This captioning is being provided as a text file being embedded, pulled into the file, and you can very easily go over.
Risk from synergies. However, better to be safe than sorry. I'm going to
very easily go over. Click this button, and it quickly changes to Japanese. And so you can do that, change your language easily, and that's all being done as a text file that's bringing in and translating it. It's not embedded in the video. You can style it, so if somebody needed to increase the text size, they could. So it's a really cool way of making your content more accessible. Unfortunately, browsers aren't doing it yet, but it's coming very soon. This is another example, and I'm not going to play this one. And in some ways, it's not as good an example because it's a music video. Well, it's a music piece. And so, obviously, if you're deaf and relying on captioning, this isn't going to do much. The picture itself doesn't really change. The rain comes down. But what it is cool about is that's captioning brought in as a text file, and it's been styled using CSS. And so that gives you an example of how you can actually make creative designs using this text file that you wouldn't necessarily have to be able to do easily without using Flash. So another quote from my survey, basically saying that auto captioning is okay, but it can be horribly inaccurate, and so it's not the best way. So you adding your own captioning is always going to be better. If you can't provide captioning for some reason, transcripts. Everyone's probably done transcripts in the past. One thing I'd like to say is try to use HTML versus PDFs, because it doesn't require you to download and have two different windows open, and you can provide an HTML transcript even on the same page. One other thing I tend to like to do with our transcripts is add an image. I've seen a lot of transcripts where it's just nothing but text, and you don't really get the basis of where your paragraphs start, when sections start, and when they end. This gives a visual cue to those who need them. That being said, people tend to prefer captioning over transcripts. So where you can, do captioning. Uh, I mentioned the structural code using ARIA. For those who aren't familiar, ARIA was designed to allow people to understand the function of different pieces of content on a website using something called roles. And what this would do is allow assistive technology to be able to understand what pieces are. So role equals navigation, role equals banner, role equals search. If you've got form elements like a slider or a text box, you can set those roles as well. Problem is, ARIA roles aren't really supported on mobile. So it's a great thing to have, great thing to put in for now. It'll work, still work for your desktop users. It eventually will be coming for your mobile users as well. What does work is landmarks. And what landmarks are doing is they're very similar to ARIA roles, except they're focused on the structure of the content. So they help people understand where the navigation is, where the banner is, where a search box is. Works very similarly, but it's more about the structure rather than the function. And these do work today in most browsers. Also wanted to talk about CSS3. I won't get too much into this either because, again, there were a ton of CSS3 sessions that went on earlier this week. But I do want to talk about some things like transitions, transforms, and animation. And the reason I bring these up is because they allow us to do some pretty cool stuff that previously we relied on JavaScript or Flash to do, and now we can do right into the code. Transforms allow you to manipulate content in a 2D space. And so what that means is you can scale it, you can rotate it, you can move it, you can skew it. And so what you can do in a lot of ways is create these animations that normally you relied on JavaScript or Flash to do, and now you can do them just in pure CSS. So here's an example of that. I don't know how many people have already seen this in the past. This is done just in CSS 3. It's an animated AT-AT from Star Wars. And it's amazing that we can do this now without relying on Flash and relying on JavaScript. And it'll also work on your mobile devices because it's not reliant on things that the mobile devices can't support. Another thing is transitions, and what this allows us to do is change our properties of our CSS or our objects over a period of time. And what you can do is achieve very similar effects to what we normally had to do with rollovers, which require JavaScript and a lot of times images, so your text would be based on an image. Now you can do it as pure text code and allow your transitions to happen in the code itself. And as I said, it can actually even happen over time, so you can have things blend in. And that's what happens here, is that as you switch between the navigation items, it'll actually slowly bring in the one navigation item to the other, and they're more eminently keyboard accessible as well. Last thing is animations, and these aren't quite as supported right now, but again, it's you can do things that previously relied on us adding a ton of extra code or plugins that our users, our disabled users and mobile users, couldn't get to. But now you can do some amazing things. I'll show you this example as well. Now this, granted, uses a little bit of JavaScript to call in some of the data. But the majority of this is done through CSS. Just give you an example of what we can do now. And has anyone ever seen this example? This is also pure CSS. Using animations and border radius and a bunch of other CSS objects. So this is all stuff that 5 years ago we would never been able to pull off without doing Flash or JavaScript or maybe Java, which is intensely consuming on our computers. Skip over that one. Another thing is typography. You know, we've all, as designers, we've always wanted to create really cool-looking site designs, and a lot of that involved our typography. But unfortunately, if you run a really cool type on your site, you tended to either have to make it an image or later use things like Kufon or Cypher to bring this text in, and those weren't necessarily as accessible, and they didn't work really well on mobile devices. Well, now we have the ability to manipulate text, direct text, it's HTML text, with CSS and do amazing things. And there's a lot of really cool typography sessions or things out there, and I've got some of the links here that allow you to do cool things, but it's still readable, and it degrades gracefully. So if somebody has a text browser, they're still going to see what it says. They're just going to lose all the flash to it. So how do you know if the feature is going to work now? There was a session earlier this week on this, and it did a really good job, and I'm not going to go that deeply into it right now, but the majority of them work now to some degree. Tends to be the more new versions of the browsers, but you can do a lot of this, except on IE. But it's worth trying now. And because a lot of them degrade gracefully, you can do them, and people who can't support it just will see normal text. They won't see the colors. They won't see the animations, but they'll see the image itself. And you can still do a lot of this cool stuff without really hurting yourself. And then there's also some JavaScript libraries you can add in which will add support to older browsers so that they can use this stuff. Modernizer is a really good one for that. If you need some more information on what is supported right now, there's 5 great sites. HTML5 Please and Can I Use and Find It by IP are do a really good job of hitting up the CSS and the HTML5 aspects, and Quirks Mode and Mobile HTML5 do really good of hitting your mobile support. Oh, sure. I have this. This is actually online now, and I'll give you the URL at the end. But sure. So, the next big thing is rethinking your mobile strategy excessively. Now, there's a lot of different philosophies out there right now competing with how to do mobile design, how to make your designs work on mobile, and how does it change for the iPad or for a mobile phone. And a lot of those strategies can be used to also improve your accessibility. So, Luke Wroblewski wrote Mobile First, recently came out about a month and a half ago. And the strategy of Mobile First basically says, look at your content and figure out how your content, what pieces of your content are most important, and how do you want to deliver those most important pieces. And the reason is they're doing this is to say, hey, listen, you know, if it's most important that you need your mobile users to get to it, it may be the most important content you need and maybe the only content you need. But if you want to go and allow desktop users or more advanced users to get more content, you can do so, but at least you get your core, which is kind of what we're doing with accessibility, is making sure that our users can get to the core messages, the core information, the core needs that they come to our sites for. And as he says, it forces you to focus and innovate on the way you present this information. So again, you focus on the most important pieces, you consider how users are going to interact with the content, and you also need to figure out the context. And this is something that is becoming more and more important and becoming more and more known within our developers, is how are your users going to be accessing the content? Not just the device necessarily, but where are they going to be when they do it? Are they going to be sitting on their couch? Are they going to be at a doctor? Are they going to be at a concert? And so thinking of those contexts can change how you deliver that content. And if you try to think about how to deliver to the most contexts at once, you're going to find your core information and how to present that. Another big thing right now is responsive web design, coined by Ethan Marcotte last year. And what it's designed to do is make our designs adapt to the user, more specifically about adapting the layout to different devices. But we can take it a little step further. So there's responsive web design, which, again, it focuses on the layout. It's taking your structure of your site and adjusting it for different devices. Responsive device design is a more specific version of that, but that uses server-side detection to say, oh, right, it's an iPad or it's a BlackBerry Playbook or whatever it is, and specifically giving different code to those devices. And then there's RESS, which is kind of a blend of the two, which says, all right, I'm going to focus on the device and I'm also going to focus on the context and deliver content in that way. And I think that has the most potential for help both accessibility and mobile use. This quote by Peter Boy is a good one, talking about how we can use responsive design to really help our accessibility by making sure that if we know the context of the user, we know we're going to be for example, speaking to an accessible or a disabled audience, we can make our buttons bigger. We can make the text size bigger, and we can do these adjustments if we know who our audience is. So the most important thing is to think about your user and the context they're going to be getting to your site in. And if you take those two things into account, you can make your sites work better on a variety of situations: mobile, accessibility, people with low bandwidth connections, devices. You can handle all that pretty well. So I already kind of went over these ways to do responsive accessibility. Set up your structure to be well read by voiceover technology. So if you've got a good structurally semantic code, it's going to work well. Make sure you use good headlines and make sure you give good link structure. Increase the size of your hit states and links on smaller screens. Create viable anchor links. And what I mean by that is, on long pages, a lot of times if you're scrolling or you're trying to read on a screen reader, it takes forever to get to a bottom of a page. So if you give anchor links at the top of the page, it allows people to get quicker to the content quicker. And then use HTML5 and CSS3 to create content that works for both mobile and disabled users. One thing that a lot of times we don't consider when we're doing our designs is the devices themselves. And the devices themselves have huge advantages over even the desktop. We did a UX book club with Luke Rabluski, and he was talking about this, that the accessibility functions on mobile devices is far superior to what you'll get on a desktop. The built-in functionality of, say, the iOS devices and Androids is better than anything you'll find on a desktop browser right now. And so take advantage of those. Setting up your sites to work on mobile and work at a structural level will allow them to use the inherent functionality on their devices to make the site better for themselves. Example of this is voice command technology. Allows people to actually control their devices and run through a website or find certain links and do functionality in ways they could never do before and that they still can't do necessarily on their desktops. So I kind of went through a couple individual things for the blind. Obviously, voiceover, allowing good content so that it can be read and allow them to be able to actually command how they would go through the site. And one of the cool things about iOS right now is it actually tells you the autocorrect text and suggested text as well, which is really great for somebody who's writing something. So if they're writing a comment within your site, they can now read what they're writing and understand it. Voice control to activate functions. There's tactile feedback with these and sound feedback, and then tablets can take advantage of larger targets and larger text. So again, that becomes to the responsive thing. If you know you're on a tablet, increase your text size, increase your button size. For the deaf, they have visual cues on their phones, and they have vibration notifications, and they can access a lot of things like texting. And my wife's uncle is actually deaf, and so when he first got his phone, he could first text. It was great. And then it was even better. He got an iPhone, and now with the video and the FaceTime, he can now sign back to people. So he doesn't have to worry about typing. He can just sign back and forth with his other deaf friends. And so there's a lot of things we can do with those type of interfaces that will allow us to enhance our sites. And then, again, I apologize. But mobility has a lot of the same things. Voice commands, larger hit states, and keyboard access. And wireless remotes allow them to go do things through their phones that they couldn't do through desktop. So how did these accessibility functions come through? iOS in version 3 in 2007 first started adding accessibility options. They were kind of limited at first, but now they have the best suite of functionality, a ton of functionality that allows them to use websites more effectively, use their devices more effectively, and we can take advantage of that. Again, good structural code. They can use VoiceOver, Zoom, large text. Android also has a lot of these same things between TalkBack, which is voice control, SoundBack, which is audio notification, and KickBack. BlackBerry actually had some decent stuff, but they haven't really changed it in the last 5 years, so it's the same things they had 5 years ago, except for the fact that the tablet didn't add anything. It's actually worse than the phones were 5 years ago in terms of accessibility. And then there's Windows Phone, which has almost nothing. There's a quick chart. And again, you can get this off the deck when online. That tells you kind of what the different functionalities and different accessibility of different phones have and how they can access your website. One problem is that the consistency of how the features are integrated on different devices is bad. We need to come up with a set of standards that allows people to go from one device to the other and get the same general experience on the different functionalities. And most of accessibility functions right now are based on vision disabilities. And that needs to change because we do have a larger audience. As if you remember my stats earlier, there were more people with hearing disabilities and mobility disabilities than vision disabilities, and they're not necessarily being addressed as much. Apps themselves. Now, I didn't really talk about apps in the presentation, but it's worth bringing up that a lot of these have taken accessibility to a new level. For example, this one, it reads a barcode, and then it'll actually voice out the nutrition information to the user so that they can hear what the particular product is and what this nutritional information is. And this is one of the coolest ones I've seen recently. It's a Braille typer. You can use it on the Android tablet. And despite the fact that there's no tactile response necessarily, they can use it because it's the positioning of the items, of the keys, are in a consistent place that they're used to using, so therefore they can type on a tablet, which is pretty cool.
What's the name of it?
I don't remember what the name of it is right now, but the two links that are on there take you to the articles about it. But it allows them to type in Braille, which is a pretty amazing thing. So apps aren't perfect either. For example, the Android web browser is very accessible, but the web browser used within apps tends to not be as much. There's sometimes some dexterity issues that apps don't take advantage of the fact that, hey, you know, you can create large hit states, but instead they create small hit states. And sometimes they can't get access to all the device functions within the apps as much as you can on the web. Speaking of web apps, believe it or not, Facebook, that bastion of UI accessibility, is trying to lead an effort to create a standard set of tests for making standardized web apps. And while I'm kind of dubious to Facebook leading this, I think that it has a lot of potential to create standardized functionality that will help everybody, both mobile and disabled users, when they get it in place. And how it works essentially is these rings are set up to be different levels of functionality. And your device will then be rated, or your web app will be rated on how well it meets these needs. And accessibility is going to be one of those rings. I want to touch on one other thing. Normally, when we think about mobile, we don't think about e-readers. But because of the price point, and they're becoming very ubiquitous, which means a lot of people are using them. And so we have to think about how they're going to be browsing our websites. And unfortunately, from an accessibility standpoint, and even from a mobile standpoint, they tend to suck. They don't have a very good rendering of websites usually, and from an accessibility standpoint, they fail a lot. Most of them have limited, if any, voiceover, and Amazon actually came back when the National Federation of the Blind complained about the fact that there wasn't voiceover. Their response was, well, that's what audiobooks are for. And audiobooks are not the same as reading the text. You're going to have to listen to somebody else's cadence. It doesn't allow you to search. It's not the same thing. And so these are going to have to get better, but you still need to consider that a lot of your users may be coming on these things, and so the more structurally sound your site is and your design is, the better these are going to work. Example of that from my survey. The gentleman was talking about how he can browse, but he gets these things where he needs to download a PDF, and the Kindle 3 doesn't do PDFs. So if you were doing a transcript, for example, they'd be out of luck. So in conclusion, what can you do? Well, I would suggest doing a mobile-first strategy, if for no other reason, to focus your content. What is your content you need to give, and how do you need to deliver that content to a user? And if you think of it in mobile context, again, most times that mobile context will translate very well over to a disabled audience, especially if you're using good semantic code. That is the key. If it works, if you got good code, 90% of your problems are solved right there, and then you can always get to that last 10% very quickly. Provide content alternatives, video, audio. Try not to use images as text or images as text, and especially since you can do so many things with typography now, which brings in HTML5, CSS3, and new JavaScript techniques are advancing and giving us a lot better ways to deliver content to all of our audiences. Built-in accessibility for mobile devices is greatly enhanced, and it's only going to get better, hopefully. And so therefore, you can take advantage of the fact that those devices will help the users even more get to your content. Better things are coming. The track command is a great one. As area roles get more mobile support, those will become great things. And the apps are becoming great ways of people getting to our content. And keep in mind that mobile is more than just phones and tablets. And keep in mind also your context that your users are using your site can greatly affect how they access your content. There's the URL. Sorry, I don't have a short URL yet. And originally I was going to put this on Slide Rocket, but I was having a lot of problems with it. So it's just up on SlideShare, which may not support all of the links as much. So I've tried to provide links in the text as well. Also, I'm still ongoing with this presentation, and I'm still doing a survey. And so if you want to take the survey from a non-disabled standpoint, or if you have a disability or know somebody has a disability, I'd love to get their input as well to further my numbers and get better results on the issues that are being seen by both mobile, non-mobile, disabled, and non-disabled users. So thank you. Questions? Do we have a microphone for...
Thanks for doing this. It's nice to see a lot of people interested in this topic. I'm actually from Milwaukee, from an independent living center, Independence First, and we're really advocates for web accessibility and design. I just wanted to make more of a comment, I guess, that even if people don't self-identify as having a disability, with the aging of the population, the sheer number of boomers and the technologically savvy nature of that population increasing, the low vision and hearing issues are really a big deal, because age-related is the same thing as disability if you're looking at visual issues as well as hard of hearing issues. So actually those numbers are quite a bit larger, even though people don't self-disclose those things and don't consider themselves someone with a disability. So the more clean, the more usable, and visually contrasted, and a lot of those tips that you use can easily be translated into that population as well. So that's a huge market share. So thank you, and thanks everybody for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, hey, so I'm Charles Chen from Google. Not so much a question as a comment, but just to your point about ARIA and mobile devices, starting in Honeycomb, we actually have ARIA support in Android. Because the way we did it is a bit of a sidetrack, but have you heard of ChromeVox? It's an extension for Chrome that makes Chrome self-voicing. That's our solution for Chrome OS accessibility. And we're actually running the exact same code on Android, because they're both WebKit-based browsers, and it's fully implementing JavaScript. So all the ARIA goodness that we put into ChromeVox directly translates into the Android browser support.
Okay.
And it's the same code that's running in both the browser and web views. So we've unified that and cleaned it up in Honeycomb. And I can talk to you more offline about
that. Yeah, I'd love to hear it. You said it was ChromeVox or ChromeVox?
Vox with a V.
Okay. One of the problems I had doing this research was trying to find a list of what things supported and didn't. And you know, Android tends to be one of the harder ones because there's multiple versions and the implementations on different devices isn't necessarily as standardized as, you know, that's one advantage iOS has is that if you have iOS, you've got iOS, and it's a version difference, but there's not the fragmentation necessarily, but it was really tough to find a lot of the information on the specs for accessibility functionality.
So most of those are documented on the ICE Free site, but we can talk more offline.
Yeah, I
can
appreciate it. That's great to know.
Yeah.
Hi, this is a great talk. Thank you for doing this. My question is, I work as a consultant with larger enterprise projects, which the developers are really committed to doing this, but often they're hamstrung by what they're allowed to use when they build stuff. So I guess my question for you is the better tact to just start trying to convince the people who are making those decisions to move along to these sort of more current technologies, or to just try to like make those older technologies just work for people who have accessibility issues, which, as you pointed out, is a lot of people?
Well, again, you know, good, clean code will solve a lot of your problems, but I would say move towards the new technologies. Last year in December, mobile web browsing finally surpassed desktop web browsing for the first time, and it's only going to get bigger. And so if you're still programming just solely for a desktop audience, you're going to start losing audience. And so not using these technologies is going to set you back. It's going to make you look old and staid. If you're still using Flash, I don't want to disparage Flash. Flash can do a lot of amazing things. I think it's become a crutch in some ways. So if you're using Flash as a crutch, like say for video, you're going to run into a larger and larger audience that can't get to your content. And so taking advantage of the CSS3 and the HTML5 stuff, and it's not a panacea by any means, but it gives you a lot more options that are a lot more available to a larger audience. And so taking advantage of those is only going to help you.
It will be great to have your slides to try to use that research to convince people on your events. So thank you.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of data from these people. Originally, I had about another 50 or 60 slides that were just data related, and I had to cut something. So I eventually will go back and put those in probably into the online presentation. So check back. Right now, it's basically essentially this, but I will be going back and putting a lot more of the data in as an appendix.
Hi, I'm Diane Kearns from AT&T. This is very informative, so thank you. I'm new. I'm not a developer. I'm a product manager, but I'm trying to learn a little bit more about HTML5 and CSS3 for our mobile apps. And I'm wondering if you have any examples of any mobile apps that are using both of those that work really well from an accessibility standpoint. Or if anybody in the room knows any.
There's a ton of them. I mean, it's right now. HTML5 is becoming like, I guess, the catchphrase, and the one advantage of it is that by programming in HTML5 versus some of the SDK types specific stuff is that you can use the same code on a web version and a browser and an app version. So it does have that advantage. I can't really think of any offhand that are specifically using HTML5 as apps. I'm sure some of the more developers can tell you some great ones in that regard.
Hi, my name is Claire Dion. I run a fund, and we finance Convergence project. So I'm a bit strange, a stranger here in the crowd, but I really appreciate it. I was just wondering, the gaming industry is a huge profitable industry. Is there anything being done in the gaming industry to make games accessible? And I'm thinking, you know, especially like little kids, you know, like we're doing a lot of games for kids. So are they doing anything to make games more accessible and then advancing, I mean, technology and everything to make them more accessible? Do you know?
I don't know, unfortunately. I didn't really focus on games, but, I mean, it makes sense.
Thank you.
Especially with the audiences of, you know, I know there's been a lot of work done with autism and iPads, that there's been a remarkable studies done on how the visual touch aspect of it has been really good for autistic children and how they interface with not only the device, but also with people around them as they pick that up. And as we've also seen, that toddlers can pick up the iPad. You know, they may not truly know what's going on, but the whole visual interface is a huge boon for them. So again, there's another crowd that you're talking about who's going to be using a mobile device as opposed to a mouse-based desktop experience. And by allowing creating your web experiences to take advantage of that, you're going to only reach a larger audience.
I actually have a little bit of an add-on. There's a group online called Able Gamers, and they have in-depth knowledge around accessibility of gaming, and there's a huge community there. And there's also, they also have assistive technology that they've sort of rigged up to be able to play on some of the other gaming systems. So you might just want to ask a question in one of the moderated forums there.
Hi, my name is Brad. I co-own a custom t-shirt company, and we've been using Flash for the last 5 years to help users create designs online. And we would like to move out of Flash. We love working with Flash. It seems to be the only thing that's been able to handle what we're doing in the interface. And so my plan has been to move to HTML5. For about the last 6 months, we've been kind of tracking those percentages. We have a significant number of users on Internet Explorer. It was about 35% of visits last year, and we're down to about 25%. About 7% of that 25% are using IE 7 and 6, which we think are probably the biggest problems. Short question, am I wrong on that? Is IE 8 showing problems with HTML5? And then secondly, is this the strategy we should be doing? Is HTML5 where we should go from Flash when we need to maintain one property? We cannot afford to try to update two different platforms. We're already spending over $200,000 a year just maintaining the site as it is. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, the old usability standard of it depends is in play, but what I would say for that is it depends on how, if you're talking about somebody creating a custom t-shirt, for example, there may be a call that it does need to be Flash, but if it's just a matter of them picking colors and adding text and those type of things, all that can be done in CSS3 and HTML5 now. And there's some amazing experiments out there using RGB colors and allowing people to make those selections. They can add their text. They can actually see the text appear in the right font and everything else that can be done that way. As for the older IE browsers, again, using JavaScript libraries like Modernizer, what that does is it actually detects the type of browser that's looking at the site and adds in, kind of injects the ability to use a lot of the newer functionality. And so that might be a way to go. It may not be perfect. I would suggest doing user testing or at least browser testing to say, all right, if we did it this way, you know, doing a prototype, testing it out, and if you can get, you know, a 98% working, then I would go that route because Flash, I mean, you're going to lose your mobile audience, quite simply. Although Android is better, you know, obviously Droid and Droid X and those type of things, and even a lot of the BlackBerry playbook can support Flash. iOS is still the biggest brand overall and doesn't, and I don't see it happening anytime in the near future.
We're not actually seeing a lot of growth in the mobile traffic to our site, but I don't want to use our analytics as proof of anything. I understand how the mobile visits are growing. You know, as a follow-up to that, one of the struggles that we're having, you know, a lot of people have said, why don't you just do a wizard? Why don't you just do progressive disclosure or just text, like you're saying, you can do all these things. And I guess that's just a difficult thing for us. We're not doing simple things with Flash. We're doing pretty complicated things. We were an Adobe Side of the Day winner. We've kind of been known for technology on the Flash front. And so it's hard to make that decision to then try to scale back because we're allowing users to do some pretty complicated things that are only really able to mimic in like a Photoshop type environment.
Well, I mean, and that may be the case that what Flash is the right choice for you then. But what you could also do is provide an alternative. If somebody does show up to your site that can't support Flash, then you do create an alternative. And right now, your alternative, or, you know, 2 years ago, your alternative would have been simply more of a wizard style. But now you can do a lot more dynamic things that can handle that audience in a way that's a closer approximation to what perhaps you're doing with the Flash, but not necessarily the same thing. Now, several sessions I went to said that the web experience doesn't need to be the same for every user. It just needs to have an equivalent ability to get to the key functionality and the key needs of that audience. And that's probably a perfect example of that. Hey, if you've got Flash, great. Use it. If you don't have Flash, here's a good experience that also gets you to what, you know, especially if it's a cool experience, you know, because nobody wants to get the, oh, well, just fill out this form versus the cool experience. So you can get it a lot closer and still make it interactive and interesting for the user.
Hi, I'm Andrew. And, you know, thanks for the presentation. But a lot of the conversation with accessibility is on consumption. How can people with disabilities consume information we're providing? Just wanted to see if you could comment on the actual production or kind of having disabled users produce information. Like, what are the banes and what are the kind of pitfalls that you've seen in your work and things like that?
When you say produce, like user-generated content?
Yes, yeah.
Well, I mean, at the base level, you know, I've seen user-generated content forms that if you go into the screen reader, all you see is, you know, input, and there's no label to it, and so it's impossible for a user to do that. On mobile, it's going to be even worse. But like I said, now with the voiceover technology and the voice command technology that the iOS have, and it sounds like was it Chrome Vox? You said has what it does is allows people to understand more what they're inputting, and therefore they have more control over that input. Part of it's also getting to content. Skip links were a good first step to say, hey, listen, you know, I don't want you to have to tab through or listen to 152 links before you finally get to the content. And that's where some of the landmarks come in, is to now somebody can just go through those landmarks very quickly and say, all right, no, I don't need the header. I don't need the navigation. Oh, there it is. There's the sidebar. That's what I know I need. And they can get to that very quickly. And similarly with the forms, the RA roles, once they get better supported on iOS, and I'm really interested in what he was talking about, it actually tells you, you know, so instead of it just being input, it's going to say slider, and then it'll read off what you're doing as you move that slider. It'll say 50, 51, 52, 53, or drop downs. It becomes a lot more enabled so that they can enter in content a lot easier. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming.
Thanks for the talk.
Oh, no problem.
I wouldn't mind a YouTube as well. I'd like to decide if you want to just talk to someone about this.
Yeah, I'd love to.
I need to make a pretty good decision for us. We love Flash. It's just one of those things. Mobile visits, iPad visits are actually down compared to last year.
And part of that could be reputation.
That's why I said I don't want to complain too much from the insights on that. But in Flash, even for the browser, even for the mobile devices that you're supposed to use it, it's a little clunky to be using the mobile environment.
A lot of the processors tend to not be able to handle, especially deeper, richer Flash experiences. And again, I don't want to dismiss Flash, because it does have value, and it has, you know, what I get into is, you know, oh, we just want Flash because we want to have an animated character go across the top of the screen. Guess what? Now you can do that, not in Flash.
Well, we're doing some stuff. I don't know if you've seen the drawstickman.com.
No, I don't.
It's solely JavaScript SVG, completely animated. And so we're testing some other types of things, but even that, I mean, that is requiring a massive amount of bandwidth to do very simple things like draw stick and simple adventure.
SVG, it's still not perfect just for that reason. A lot of the animations tend to have that same problem. It's going to get better. The bandwidth is getting better, too. So as that happens, you'll get the better experiences. So I'd be interested to see what you're doing. And as I said, it may come down to just be... our primary experience is still going to be Flash, because that's the best interactive experience we can give.
Pass the rules down to...
and then have an alternative experience that does similar.
Nervous about maintaining those two.